Hi, welcome to Financial Aid for Junior Parents, The Basics. This is an overview of the essential vocabulary and process for financial aid. In the fall, after families who are currently juniors become seniors, we will also be offering a more in-depth, step-by-step financial aid workshop hosted by a representative from the financial aid office of a particular college. Now I'll give you to Elizabeth, who's going to walk you through the basics of everything you need to know about financial aid, before switching back to me to talk through some vocabulary and case studies.
So the goal of this presentation is to help families understand that financial aid at colleges is not like urban financial aid, even though it seems pretty similar. The way it's calculated is actually quite different. Urban tends to be far more generous, and things like cost of living are not taken into account. We'll discuss how to figure out what an EFC, or expected family contribution, is. We'll discuss what exactly a net price calculator is and where you can find it, and then also address how to communicate with your student about loans and specifically loan repayment. So on a very basic level, financial aid is the cost of attendance, the COA. You subtract from that the expected family contribution, also referred to as EFC, and the difference is the student's financial need or eligibility. And financial aid is what covers a family's financial need. So not financial want or anything to do with merit money. It just covers specifically what the family needs financially. So to break down that calculation further, the cost of attendance is the tuition and fees at a college or university, the room and the board. This can include housing, so whether you live on campus or off campus, if you have a roommate, different meal plans as well, books and supplies, transportation, so getting to and from school. Are you able to drive? Are you flying? Are you taking a train? And then miscellaneous expenses like a cell phone bill also can get calculated into the cost of attendance. From the cost of attendance, you'll subtract the expected family contribution. And this is a number that's calculated from information on the financial aid forms that you'll fill out. And we'll talk about those in a moment. The taxes that you've just filed or are about to file are the ones that you'll use for your students' applications for financial aid. And also be aware that colleges assume two things to be true when you're applying for financial aid. The first is that parents are primarily responsible for helping to pay for their dependent child's education, and that students are in some way responsible for helping pay for their educational cost. So that EFC, the expected family contribution, numbers calculated with income and earnings, the number of people that are dependent on you in the household. If you have dependent students in college, so you're paying college tuition for dependent students, the age of the older parent. This one is significant because if one parent is closer to retirement, then more funds are protected and that doesn't get calculated in the EFC. And then any assets outside the family home, so stocks, bonds, boats, investments, that kind of thing. And you calculate the number officially with the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. That's the primary form for financial aid. The FAFSA does not look at home equity. If parents are divorced, the FAFSA only considers a custodial parent. But if you are remarried, the step-parent information is included. There are, however, some colleges that will consider home equity and non-custodial parent information. This is on a different financial aid form. It's called the profile, and we'll discuss that in a little bit. Before you do the FAFSA, you can calculate an estimated EFC with these three tools here, FinAid.org, FAFSA Forecaster, or on collegeboard.org, and this can give you a good estimate of what your family contributions could be. And this is important to know because this number will stay the same college to college. Your EFC is your EFC. You can pay what you can pay regardless of how much the college costs. So we'll talk about some specific examples, and the thing to note on the following slides is that the EFC is the same. So notice the cost of attendance and then how the need changes based on that. The first example, Stanford, cost of attendance $70,000. The EFC is $25,000. So the need at Stanford would be $45,000. Second example, USF, cost of attendance $63,000. EFC remains $25,000. And the subsequent need is $38,000. Looking at UCSC, cost of attendance, $35,000. EFC remains $25,000, and the need there is $10,000. And then lastly, San Francisco State University, cost of attendance, $24,000. The EFC is still $25,000, and the need there is zero. So if you're curious about how to figure out how colleges could specifically package your financial aid, you can look online at college websites at their net price calculator. This is found on the college admissions and financial aid webpage. It's federally mandated to be on the website, so all colleges will have a net price calculator. And this is college specific, and it'll demonstrate how a particular college can meet your family's need, because colleges can and will package families differently. Need is typically met through a few different methods: gift aid and self-help aid. Gift aid is grants and scholarships, or money you don't have to pay back. And then self-help is loans, and we'll dive into loans in a little bit. And then work study, which is where a student is guaranteed to have an on-campus job, earning a certain amount of money each year, and that goes right into the student's pocket. So it's not technically going towards the cost of attendance, but it does help to offset some of the cost by making sure the student has income coming in throughout the school year.
Okay, so now we'll talk about where this money, this magical money, actually comes from. And there are generally three sources for financial aid. There are federal government backed sources of money. There are government, local or state government sources of money. In our case, for California, it would be from California, the state, from the government of California, and then individual colleges and universities. And we will walk through all different sorts and all different sources of monies. So grants, and grants, to be clear, are sources of financial aid that are gifted to the student and their family. They are not, you do not need to repay them. It is essentially taking money off the sticker price of tuition. There are three kinds I'll cover here. Pell grants are the first kind. Those are federally backed. Those are federal funds. They are up to $5,000 a year, and they are for students who are designated as low or very low income. Usually, they're awarded to students where the maximum household income for a family of four would be $50,000. There is also, in our case for California residents, the Cal Grant. Those are for California schools, public or private. So it could be a UC, a CSU, or a private college. Those can be, as of this year, up to $12,000. It depends on the school that you're attending, how much money for which you're eligible. Students need to have, at the very least, a 3.0 GPA per the California calculations in grades 10 or 11. And there are limits to household income. Usually it's about, it is up to $95,000 in household income to be eligible, but there is some difference depending on the different sorts of Cal grants. So students usually apply and then just see if they're eligible or not. And the third kind, and this is really where the bulk of financial aid comes from, are institutional grants and scholarships. And institutional grants mean essentially that a school determines that they are going to offer a significant amount of money to a student in order to make the tuition more affordable for their family. They are determined by the school. There is nothing federally or state at the state level that's calculated. And they can range from nothing, they can range from very little, to covering the full cost of attendance of a college, depending on the student and the application. Scholarships is a word that comes up a lot. And to be clear, scholarships can range from something that's from an outside organization, such as a private company or a foundation, to merit and athletic scholarships. And I'll just run through those three versions. Merit scholarships are not need-based. So a student may receive a merit scholarship if they could pay the tuition four times over. They are based generally on either academic achievement or some other sort of community or talent-based contribution that the student would make to a college campus. Usually, you're offered a merit scholarship, or frequently you're offered a merit scholarship just by virtue of applying to a college, but sometimes you also need to fill out an additional application form that allows the school to know that you're interested in receiving a merit scholarship, and they will be explicit in the application process what you need to do. Beyond that, there are athletic scholarships. To be clear, athletic scholarships are not offered at Division III schools. The majority of urban school athletes, not all, but the majority who play sports in college play Division III. Division I are the only ones who are allowed to attach a money incentive to playing college sport. And the third are outside scholarships. We want to be very clear. There are many companies, people, organizations who will try to get you to pay for a scholarship research. You do not need to pay for this. There are many ways to find out about scholarships without paying anyone. One is a website, fastweb.com. We also internally here at Urban, for our students and families, have a culled list of scholarships that we believe are sound and worthwhile. On Naviance, we welcome you to look at those as well. But we want to reiterate that no one should ever be paying for searching for scholarships. And there are many ways to search based on your parameters or certain parameters or demographics that meet who your student is in the process. I also want to reiterate that for merit scholarships, many highly selective schools do not offer any kind of merit scholarship. So while you may be interested in going to the school, they would offer strong financial aid based on need, there may be no opportunity for students to receive additional aid based purely on some sort of achievement that they contribute to the campus. I want to move to talking about loans now. And there are three different kinds of loans, direct or Stafford loans. And within that category, we have both subsidized and unsubsidized. And we'll talk about that in a second. There are Parent Plus loans, which is essentially a kind of private loan that's available only to parents, not to the student. And then there are standard private loans, the kind you would walk into a bank to apply for. So under the category of direct loans, there are two kinds, subsidized and unsubsidized. Subsidized loans are need-based. They are government-backed, and the government actually pays the interest on the loan while the student is in school, which is one of their benefits. Each year, the government sets the rate of interest on these loans. This year, it's fixed at a little over 5%. But then a subsidized loan means that as long as the student is in school, they do not need to worry about interest accruing. Unsubsidized loans are not need-based. Essentially, anyone could take out a not need-based loan that is unsubsidized. You can defer the interest while an unsubsidized loan is in school, so you do not need to be paying it while you're enrolled. But afterwards, you need to pay back the loan that was accruing while you were a student. And this year, again, it looks like they're fixed at 5%, a little over 5%, but that can change. One thing that the federal government does is there are limits to the annual and aggregate amounts a student can take out for a loan. So this year, for example, it is $5,500 in the first year of school as a first-year student that a student's allowed to take out. They will not let them take out more. The idea is protect students and families from accruing too much debt. And over the 4 years, a student is only allowed to accrue $31,000 in debt. So they are capped. There's no way that the federal government will lend them more money than that. Most of these loans come with a 6-month grace period after graduation, which is nice, and they offer up to 10 years for repayment. I want to talk about Parent Plus loans. These are available only to the parent or guardians of undergraduates. They are not need-based, as I mentioned. They have a 10-year repayment period, and they usually have a higher fixed rate interest. So this year it was 7.6%. That could change from year to year. But the idea is that these are essentially loans that are sanctioned specifically as student loans, but they are offered to the parents specifically. The one thing to know is that you can be offered up to the amount of this cost of attendance, so the amount a family would need to pay, minus any other aid a student receives. So if a tuition is $40,000 and a student receives $5,000 in need-based aid as a grant, they could take out a Parent Plus loan up for the remaining balance of their cost of attendance. To be also alerted and worth noting is that a financial aid package should never include a PLUS loan. Some colleges have a practice of putting the PLUS loan as a part of the financial aid package, and this is honestly disingenuous and fairly considered misrepresentation. It is essentially just a loan, and if they put it on their financial aid package, it's not really part of the financial aid. It's just an opportunity to take out a loan. And then, of course, there are private loans, which are the same as any kind of bank loan that you might go into a bank to ask for. They're not protected in any way by the government. They're sometimes called alternative loans. A student usually needs a cosigner to get one, so an adult. And the interest rate usually is considerably higher than either a Stafford or a PLUS loan. All right. Loan calculators are actually really valuable, and we recommend students looking at them with their family. A loan calculator takes the sort of base amount of the loan, and it plays out a number of things. It can show what a student will need to make annually upon graduation to begin repaying the loan in a sound way that doesn't put them in a financially compromised position. You can also see how much a loan will be at the end of its term. So we have a few slides here if you look through the PDF of the slideshow, where you can see different scenarios of household size and household size and how much a student would need to make in order to repay a loan, depending on how many people are in their family. One thing that's important to point out as another method of financial aid for students is work-study. And work-study is a pretty phenomenal program. The government essentially pays a college to pay a student to do a job on campus. And those jobs range widely from student tour guide to working in the library, to research assistant, and students get money directly in their pocket to offset the cost of attending college. So it's not that it goes to pay directly to the tuition bill, but it offers them an opportunity to have money that assumes it will be put towards their living expenses or could be put towards tuition while a student is in school. Also worth noting is that a college will usually expect that a student is able to work a summer job while they are in college. So work study is limited the number of hours. It should never encroach on their ability to do schoolwork. It will be something like maybe 5 or 10 hours a week maximum. But a summer job is expected for students to contribute. So what we're going to do is walk through a few scenarios of students to see how different packages might play out, because just because a student's EFC or family's EFC is fixed doesn't mean that the implications for what they will need to pay are the same. So our first example, if you're looking at the PDF, would be a student named Henry. We've indicated 4 different colleges here with 4 different tuitions. The first one we call College A has a cost of attendance or a full tuition and room and board and additional expenses of a little over $70,000. In this case, our student Henry receives a tuition grant of a little over $50,000, which is wonderful. There's an offer of a student loan, which is the maximum for a first-year student of $5,500, and Henry's also offered $2,500 in work study. This brings his EFC, so the expected family contribution, down to $10,000. And indeed, that is what is remaining for a student that his family will need to pay. So there's a fairly straightforward scenario. The next one down is a little more complicated and worth noting because this can happen. And the terminology we're going to use here is gap. And this is where a college says, we know you can only pay a certain amount of money, but we're going to request that in order to attend our college, you need to pay more. And there's a gap between what the EFC is and what the family needs to pay to attend that college for tuition that year. So in this case, College B has a tuition of $64,700, and the student, Henry, receives a grant of $24,000. The same student loan is on offer for $5,500. This college, however, doesn't have any work study money that they're going to offer to Henry, so they can choose how they allot their work study, and they're not giving it to him. This family's EFC remains $10,000. That's a federally calculated number or federally calculated with addition of the form, the profile that the school uses to determine that this is what they can pay, so that will never change. But in this case, the college says, we're not going to give you that work study. We're not going to give you a bigger grant. So even though our tuition is lower, you're still going to have to come up with $25,200 in order to pay for your first year of college. So this puts his family in a predicament because they know they only really have $10,000 and maybe not even that. The college may determine that, but they may feel that that's even a stretch. But they're going to need to pay $25,000 and a little bit out change in order to attend. So that's a one to look out for. Option C is a slightly cheaper college. Again, $44,000, a little over $18,000 in grant, student loan of $5,500, no work study again, EFC of $10,000. So that leaves $20,000 to pay. And then the last one is worth noting because it's a little more exciting. It's $66,000, so by no means a cheap college. In fact, it's the second most expensive one here. But in this case, Henry received a $45,000 grant, which is pretty generous. He's being offered a $5,500, the same $5,500 student loan, but he's being offered $3,000 in work study, which is a nice bonus. And the EFC is $10,000. But in addition, and it's not stated here, he's receiving a $7,500 merit scholarship, which brings what his family needs to pay below the $10,000 that they can pay if they're EFC and down to $2,500. So from a purely financial expense standpoint, the College D is going to knock everything else out of the park. But in the process of selecting a college, you have to remember that College A may be more enticing to Henry. And so your family collectively needs to decide where the priority lies and how much wiggle room you actually have. We have a second student here. I'm not going to walk through the specifics, but student Sam has a similar situation. He has a merit scholarship from College B that allows him to pay nothing for college. And then he has a second one, College C, where he is going to be gapped $14,000. So that's a pretty significant amount to be gapped, as is College D, which is $28,000. So we'll just take a look at those. And if you have questions, feel free to reach out to us. People also want to know, obviously, how you can access this magical money from colleges, and there are a few forms. Elizabeth already alluded to them. One is the FAFSA. Again, this is a free application for student aid. This is a government form. You can go online and fill it out. You should not be paying for it. There are some sketchy websites online that will say, oh, pay us this fee and we'll fill out your FAFSA for you. You should not be paying anyone to fill out the FAFSA, and the student and the parent both have components that they need to fill out. To be clear, there's also the CalGrant verification form, but that's only for students who are applying to go attend college in California. That's a one-sheet form. We will give it to the student in the spring of their senior year, and they will will be asked to fill out a very basic set of demographic and fields, and we will send it in at Urban School. And then the CSS profile. And the CSS profile is the form that looks most similar to the Urban SSS forms if you have been filling those out throughout high school. These are forms that ask for a lot more nuance. If there are two parents and they are not in the same household, it will ask for all parental income information, any assets, land, anything that you may have that could potentially be turned into a liquid and paying for college will be requested on the CSS profile, but it also allows schools to be much more nuanced and much more accurate in how they disburse funding. And then occasionally you will still see an individual college financial aid application. These are rarer and rarer, but they do come up where instead of using the CSS profile, a college will ask for specific forms or questions that are on their college website. So please be alert to those as well. To be clear about the FAFSA, it can be submitted after October 1st. And the earlier the better, honestly. In best case scenario, if you have filed your taxes online, you will be able to import your tax information directly into the FAFSA, which saves you time and is a nice convenience. That doesn't always work, but it often works. This is an important note, and it's different than applying for financial aid in K-12. You will use your tax year that is currently filed. So you do not use the tax year that while your student is applying, you will use the one before. So for example, for the class of 2020, you'll be using your 2018 taxes to apply for financial aid because you will have completed that tax year. And each year you use the next year's taxes to file the following year's financial aid application. So you will not need to wait to file your taxes in order to fill your FAFSA out or to submit your tax information for college applications. To be also clear, every single year you reapply, you redo the FAFSA for the next year's financial aid, and you reapply using new forms. So just because you received financial aid 1 year doesn't mean that you're done for 4 years. You need to continue to reapply. That said, it is fairly consistent. Colleges will not change your financial aid award significantly unless there's been a significant change to your finances. So if bearing the next tax year, you suddenly make more or less money or you have fewer or greater assets, the college will adjust accordingly. The CalGrant GPA verification form, as we mentioned, we will hand out to students. It's submitted before March 1st, March 2nd, and it's a very basic form. It does not require a lot. The CSS profile, as I mentioned, is much more nuanced. It's available and administered by the college board. It is due when the application for the college is due in general, and it's a two-step process. There's a $9 registration fee, and then each college for which you apply for the profile is $16, so it can actually add up. It's not exactly a cheap form considering that it's asking students for financial aid information. One thing to know about the CSS profile that the FAFSA does not cover, the CSS profile will consider home equity. It will also protect, most colleges will protect your home equity to a degree. It varies from college to college, but if you have home equity, it's not going to ask you to drain your home, but they will ask you to dip into whatever your equity is to a particular degree. So it's worth knowing that. And again, if you have a two-parent household but they're not together or married, it will generally require both. There are ways to have certain exceptions. Families sometimes do have a parent with whom they are not in contact, and there are ways to indicate that that is the case, but it requires additional information, and you need to reach out to the colleges directly. Individual applications, you really should check with each school to make sure that you know exactly what you need to do, because they may have specific forms you need to find out about. As I mentioned, special circumstances also come into play. So this is what I was describing. If there are, in addition to a parent not being in the picture or not financially engaged with the family, there may be cases where you have an additional relative or someone you're supporting that doesn't show up on tax forms, or some sort of change or loss of job. These are cases that you would need to indicate directly to a college. So one thing to know about financial aid is what to ask colleges. So I'm going to turn it back over to Elizabeth.
So as you begin to research colleges and look at more about the financial aid process, it's very important to ask every college these questions, because the policies will probably be different school to school. So one main question to ask is the college need blind or need sensitive in the admissions process? If the college is need blind, it means that they're reading the application for admission without any regard to the student's ability to pay. If this college is need sensitive, or you might hear this as need aware, it means that they are looking at the application for admission and the student's ability to pay. So that's an important distinction to be aware of when you're looking at colleges. If also good to know if the college meets need for students. who demonstrate needs. So some colleges will pledge to meet 100% of a family's demonstrated needs. Some will not, but it's important to know which ones do and which ones don't. Also be very clear about what forms each college requires and what their due dates are. And if you have nuanced questions about what the colleges calculate in terms of home equity, the cost of living, the custodial or non-custodial parent, that's a question for the financial aid office. You can call the office. You can go and do a meeting as well with the financial aid office in the same way that you would with the college admissions officers. But these are questions that are better geared towards the financial aid office because these are often separate offices from the admissions office. But make sure to make that a point to ask these questions at each college that you visit. So what you can do right now is get an estimate and calculate your expected family contribution or your EFC. You can go online to the specific college website and do the net price calculator. Again, that's federally mandated, so that will be on the website. You can also do the loan calculator and walk through some examples with your student of what loan repayment could look like. And if you haven't already, file your taxes. So to circle back to the beginning, you should now have a better sense of how financial aid at college is not like urban financial aid. You know how to figure out your expected family contribution. You know to look on the college admission financial aid website for the net price calculator, and you'll have more terminology and specific tools to talk to your student about loans. But also remind your student that this is a long process. And then if you start to research early, it will help you as a family to make more informed decisions down the line. So be sure to talk to your students and to set expectations that are realistic, especially around loans. Starting early is also very helpful. Make it a point to contact financial aid offices at various colleges. And then conduct research and be optimistic, but also realistic. And you can ask your counselor if you need more specific guidance.
Thanks so much.